What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Martha Ann Toll, author of Three Muses. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's now just 1 week before Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, which begins Sunday night, September 25th. This is the home stretch for this 5782 Jewish calendar year. Last night we observed Slichot with the beautiful melodies of the High Holy Days, a kind of preview for the days of awe ahead. It's always an amazing night, Slichot, very late. For Slichot, which means basically prayers of apology, are offered at midnight or, you know, thereabouts, which makes this Sunday a very early morning for those of us who participated in Slichot services last night. But it's a great way to get yourself personally ready for the Cheshbon HaNefesh, the annual personal inventory ahead during the coming High Holy Days. Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, actually has four different names. Of course, Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year, Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment, Hayom Harat Olam, the birthday of the world, and Yom HaZikaron, the Day of Remembrance. Each of these highlights a different aspect of this exceptionally important holy day. Of course, we'll begin the Jewish New Year, 5783, next Sunday night and Monday. And it's on the first day of that year, by tradition, that God examines our conduct in the year that is past and determines our fate in the coming year. The Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment, gives the verdict. But we can appeal all the way through Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, next week in October, when the Supreme Court of Judaism, again, God, will see if we have repented our sins and made amends to those we've offended and have averted any severe decree. On Rosh Hashanah, we also celebrate the creation of the world. Hayom Harat Olam, again, according to tradition, God's creation actually began on this day. And as is traditional and important in all Jewish festivals, we remember our history, our historical connection to God and our people on Yom HaZikaron, the Day of Remembrance. Actually, now that I think about it, there's a fifth name for Rosh Hashanah too, Yom Truah, the Day of the Sounding of the Shofar, the great blasts of which serve to awaken in us the spirit of return and repair. Speaking of return, if you haven't yet made arrangements for where you're going to be on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you should do so, today. For synagogues are pretty well filled up on the High Holy Days. Some of those folks only come on the Yomim Noraim. I've never quite figured out why, but they wouldn't miss Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for any reason. It's the most important time of year for Jews and the most moving. Of course, it's also the most serious time of year when self-reflection and repentance are the order of the day, and the evening, too. To help you prepare properly for your own cheshbon hanefesh, your own accounting of the soul, we're continuing our preview of the music of these high holy days. Here's the Unetana Tokef. We observe the mighty holiness of this day, which is one of awe and trembling. The text is from the Middle Ages, and it's part of the morning services, both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Here it will be sung by Shai Abraham with the San Francisco Philharmonic Orchestra and choir.
Unetaneh תעשה מלכותך ויקור בחסד כיסך ותשב עליו באמת ותשב עליו באמת
אמת כי אתה
הוא דיין ומוכיח ויודע ואין וכותב וחותם וסופר ומונה ותזכור כל הנשכחות ותפתח את ספר הזיכרונות ומאליו יקרא וחותם יד שופר גדול יתקע וכל דממה דקה יישמע ומלאכים יחפזו וכיל רעדה יוחזו ומלאכים יחפזו
Unetana Tokef for Rosh Hashanah and the Days of Awe, coming in just over a week to a temple near you. Maybe without the Philharmonic Orchestra, but still beautifully. When I think of the number of people who attend High Holy Days services and the constant efforts we rabbis make to bring them back at other times of the year, I'm reminded of a story about a bar mitzvah. At a certain synagogue, a young man was preparing for bar mitzvah who was known for his lack of religious motivation. The rabbi of the congregation was not about to let this go unnoticed. The boy performed his bar mitzvah and rose to the occasion as best he could, with the minimal preparation he had done. It wasn't great, but it was nearly over. When it came time to hand out gifts, the boy received the usual kiddush cup, a siddur, a prayer book, and a Tanakh, a Bible, from the congregation. And then the rabbi added a special gift. He said, "You have received many gifts today, many treasures of Judaism in book form that will enrich your life and make it holy in the eyes of God. And now, here is my own special gift to you." With that, he pulled out an umbrella from behind the podium and told the guy, "I present you this umbrella because I want to give you a gift that at least I know you will open." I think the most American Jews are a little bit like that bar mitzvah boy. Judaism is the prayer book and the Bible we don't open most of the year. But maybe the High Holy Days prove to be the umbrella. In any case, Rosh Hashanah is just a week from tonight and tomorrow, September 25th and 26th. Time to open that umbrella. Join a synagogue near you, like my own Congregation Beit Simcha, right here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live. Our guest this morning, Martha Ann Toll, has written a beautiful novel about dance, singing, memory, love, and wisdom. She is the author of Three Muses. Meet her when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Martha Ann Toll is a prominent book reviewer, essayist, and social justice advocate whose new novel is called Three Muses. It's a beautifully written, finely crafted piece of, it's kind of a post-Holocaust story with tremendous artistic influence, as you might expect from the title. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Rabbi Cohen, I am so thrilled to be here.
Tell us about the conception of Three Muses. It's a complicated and very interesting story.
Thank you so much. Well, I'll start with a title called Three Muses, which refers to a strand of Greek mythology that is less well known than the one we might be more familiar with, in which there are only three as opposed to the nine muses. And those three muses are song, discipline, and memory. And the characters in my book loosely reflect those ideas, both as a practical matter, but both as in a sort of metaphor way.
You know, we receive here at Too Jewish many author requests for interviews, and an enormous number of them are Holocaust books or post-Holocaust books. But I don't actually think this is one, even though the Holocaust plays an important kind of almost central role in a way. Were you trying to write a Holocaust, post-Holocaust story?
Oh, I kind of want to ask you a question before I answer that.
Sure.
Why did you say that? I probably agree with you, but I would love it if you expand a little bit about why it doesn't feel like a Holocaust book.
You know, I know it seems strange thing to say. You start out with Holocaust settings. I don't want to, you know, give too much away about the book. It's a complicated love story. It's a character exploration, multiple character exploration. And it has obviously this kind of artistic flavor all through it, which I think distinguishes it from stories that are, you know, you hate to say the same story's being told a lot of different ways, but it sometimes feels that way. This doesn't feel that way. So that's kind of why I'm saying that.
Well, I really appreciate that insight. And I always feel like the writer is the person who's least able to speak about their book. So really interesting.
Boy, you should try to interview musicians sometimes.
The point you made is really important to me because in this book, the most important of the muses is memory. And I am deeply interested in memory, both as a Jewish person. I feel our collective memory is what holds us together. But also as a novelist, writers draw and access their own memories. And memory is also incredibly complicated. And the problem for this Holocaust survivor in this book, John, is his memory. He lands well in the United States. He lands in a beautiful family and a good profession and that kind of thing. But I really wanted to explore what this kind of memory does to somebody and what is the role of the writer in transmitting those memories to the future.
We will talk much more with Martha Toll. Her book is called Three Muses. It's a beautiful book. It's won a bunch of awards. I think it'll win more when we come back here on Too Jewish in just a moment. The Jewish High Holy Days are coming. Why not join us at Congregation Beit Simcha? Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a fabulous array of services, classes, and events this fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Cohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone. everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or attend on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. That's 520-276-5675. Religious school has begun for school-age children or grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew School Barn Bat Mitzvah program, Torah Tykes Experience, Confirmation, and Teen Programs in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. For Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, members and guests are warmly welcomed in our sanctuary, but can attend online. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located 2270 West Ina Road, north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Come in person Friday night and Saturday morning. You can also email me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org, or join us every Friday night on our Facebook page. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. Torah study is at 9 a.m. and Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson. Our musical services are in person and by virtual experience. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are offered live and on Zoom. You can access those through our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. And our religious school is available in blended format, too, some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tykes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, Confirmation, high school programs, rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, and, of course, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. All of our services in person and on our Facebook page, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest-growing Jewish congregation community in all of Arizona and its exciting beginning years. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, TOOJewishRadio.com, streaming us there as incredibly popular podcasts on iTunes. Top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine. Over 175,000 downloads on Podbean and now on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review 2 Jewish wherever you listen to our podcast. Those comments are a help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520 888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, we haven't talked about this for a while, but the war in Ukraine drags on. It's still brutal. Their Jewish Prime Minister Zelensky is still in place. Or is it president?
President.
President, sorry. And let's get a little bit of an update from you.
I think they also have a Jewish prime minister.
That's correct. They have a Jewish president, Jewish prime minister, and a lot of Jews in Ukraine still.
A lot, of course, have left. Yeah, this war doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. The most remarkable thing for me is the extent to which life in at least certain big cities in Ukraine, like Lviv and Kyiv, goes on more or less normally. I mean, I have friends there who post regular stuff on Facebook of like going to the gym or, you know, new restaurants that have opened. And it's quite remarkable in the face of a war which threatens the very existence of their nation, the degree to which people can live their lives normally. And I don't think any of them pretend that nothing is going on. That's reserved for people in Moscow who completely pretend that nothing out of the ordinary is happening and resolutely act as if all of this is normal. They study international law, which seems like so ironic. Why, if you were a bright young person in a completely lawless country that had no respect for the rule of law, why would you want to get a degree in international law?
I have no answer for that. I mean, maybe it's a purely academic study. Like, you know, I really want to know about medieval art.
Maybe. The other thing that has sort of a specifically Jewish angle and a little bit of an Israeli angle is how many Ukrainian refugees have gone to Israel and then left in the relatively short period that this has all been going on. I mean, still seems like a long time, but realistically, it's barely 6 months. And a lot of Ukrainian Jews were, quote unquote, rescued. They were given refuge in Israel. Sometimes the Israelis found that they weren't really Jewish, whatever that means. So they didn't get all the benefits that ones who were certifiably Jewish got. But even ones who were certifiably Jewish and got all the benefits, in many cases, felt less than really welcome or less than fully tolerated. And they left. They didn't necessarily go back to Ukraine. They may have gone on to third destinations, you know, Australia, Canada, wherever. But it's very interesting to me that, you know, a lot of American Jews in particular see Israel as the plan B. If things go wrong, if it happens here, if there's a repeat of Nazi Germany, Israel is their safe room.
Right.
And
right.
A place of ultimate refuge.
The ultimate and safe haven, right?
It turns out that at least in the case of Ukrainian Jews, that wasn't necessarily the case.
You know, it does remind me, of course, of the exodus of the Soviet Jews after the fall of the Soviet Union, when a million Soviet Jews, former Soviet Union, FSU Jews, went to Israel.
Gorbachev opened the floodgates.
Right, I mean who just passed away a couple weeks ago. And the fascinating part, and a lot of them, of course, stayed, and it made Israel enormously stronger, richer, more technologically successful. You can credit a fair amount of the huge development in high tech in Israel to that influx of Soviet immigrants. But a lot of them didn't stay and went elsewhere afterwards. It's never easy to immigrate to a new country. I don't care if it's coming from Honduras to America or Ukraine to Israel, and it may not be the best fit. And we just kind of brush it all as though, oh, well, that ought to work for everybody. Israel's a unique place. And by the way, not an inexpensive place to live.
Right.
Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Rivka goes to the bedroom to wake up her son to go to synagogue, but Moshe just rolls over and says, "I'm not going to shul, Ma." His mother asks, "Why not?" Moshe says, "Two reasons. I don't like them, and they don't like me. And his mother says, I'll give you three good reasons to go. One, it's Rosh Hashanah today. Two, you are 50 years old. And three, you're the rabbi. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. By the way, somebody came up to me recently and said, you need to get some new old Jewish jokes of the week. And I thought, wait a minute. New old Jewish? And now a word of Torah. In this week's portion of Nitzavim, Moses is nearing the end of his leadership and his life. That gives a special poignancy to his message. It is the last will and testament in Nitzavim of Moshe Rabbeinu, kind of Moses on management. What will Moses teach us about how to carry on after he's gone? How will our greatest leader pass the baton? And who will he give it to? The answer comes quickly, and it's a bit of a surprise. Here in Nitzavim, Moses' great message is not that he's passing the mantle of control to Joshua. He does that, of course, but his central teaching is that of leadership through empowerment. Each Israelite can grasp the central concepts of our contract with God and fulfill it. Every single Jew has the capacity to fulfill the Torah, our commitment to God. And we each have the responsibility to do so and the choice to carry it out or not. And that thousands of years old lesson has meaning for us today. What makes this particularly appropriate is that we're close to completing Deuteronomy, a text filled with ethical and moral laws for personal conduct. Give to the poor, to the stranger, to the orphan, to the widow. Treat employees with generosity, kindness, and respect. Protect others against negligence. Deal honestly in your business and with others. Be gracious and moral in your treatment of animals. Reward loyalty. Do not seek to humiliate others. Live a life of commitment to your ideals. Keep your word and your vows. Of course, we don't have to actually do any of this, as Moses states so clearly in God's name here in Nitzavim. We can choose to do otherwise, to act unethically, and create a rotten world, institutions not worthy of respect, personal lives based on deception and dishonor. We can choose not to support the needy, to ignore the homeless, to leave those who teach Torah without the means of support to do their essential work. It is always our own choice. As we approach the time for tshuva, return and repentance, Slichot was last night at our congregation of Beit Simcha. Rosh Hashanah is just a week away. The message in our portion is clear. This Torah of ours is not too hard for us. It's not too far from us. It is here, now, close, in our hands. And it is up to us to learn it, to live it, to do it. Well, not a bad last speech for Moses for this final Shabbat of the year next weekend. Not a bad lesson for the end of the year and for the beginning of next year, Sunday night and Monday, a week from now, or any time. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest this morning, Martha Ann Toll, will tell us how a Holocaust story can sometimes not be a Holocaust story, and much more. Find out. We'll return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The U.S. Supreme Court temporarily blocked a court order that would have forced Yeshiva University in New York to recognize an LGBTQ group as an official campus club. The court acted last week in a brief order signed by Justice Sonia Sotomayor that indicated the Supreme Court would have more to say on the topic at some point. Yeshiva University, the flagship educational institution of modern Orthodoxy in America, argued that granting recognition to the LGBTQ group, the YU Pride Alliance, would violate its sincere religious beliefs. On the other side, the Pride Club said Yeshiva University already has recognized a gay Pride Club at its law school, Cardozo Law School. But Cardozo is a mostly independent, although affiliated, institution of Yeshiva University. A New York State court trial judge sided with the LGBTQ student group and ordered the university to recognize the YU Pride Alliance immediately under the New York City Human Rights Law, which bars discrimination in public accommodations. The matter is on appeal in the state court system, but judges there refused to put the order on hold in the meantime. Yeshiva University argues it's exempt from the law because it's a religious corporation, and it has a free exercise right to reject recognition of the club, consistent with its Jewish Orthodox values. The YU Pride Alliance argued there was no irreparable harm justifying emergency relief from the Supreme Court, particularly because the university's Cardozo School of Law already has that official student group called Outlaw. Supreme Court has been very receptive to religious freedom claims recently. Yeshiva University is represented by the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. That group has argued some of the cases that have changed the direction of the court on similar matters. In June, conservatives, who hold a 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court, struck down a Maine program prohibiting state funds from being spent at religious schools and ruled a high school football coach in Washington State has the right to pray on the field after games. Remains to be seen how the justices will rule on this matter. It is unlikely the LGBTQ Alliance will achieve official status at YU. From the SCOTUS to the world of entertainment. In a move that is thrilling some Jewish audiences and stirring controversy among other international fans and activists, Marvel Studios announced an Israeli comic book hero will appear in the next installment of its Captain America movie franchise. Captain America: New World Order is set for release in 2024. It will feature Israeli actress Shira Haas as Sabra, a hero who debuted with a cameo back in a 1980 Incredible Hulk comic and appeared as a full character the following year in a strip set in Israel titled Incredible Hulk: Power in the Promised Land. Since the details of Marvel projects are kept under tight wraps until release, it is not known how prominent Shira Haas's character, first Israeli to appear in the Marvel cinematic universe, will be in the movie. Between 1980 and 2019, Sabra appeared in 50 issues of the comic book. Shira Haas was the first Israeli nominated for an Emmy for her role in Unorthodox, the Netflix miniseries based on Deborah Friedman's autobiography about leaving the Satmar Haredi Orthodox community in Brooklyn. Feldman, by the way, is a past guest of Too Jewish. In other entertainment Jewish news, Julia Garner and Brett Goldstein were the big Jewish Emmy Award winners last week. Both actors took home statuettes on television's Starriest Night. Julia Garner scored her third win for Best Supporting Actress in a Drama for her role on Netflix's crime show Ozark, which concluded this year. She previously won in 2019 and 2020 for the same show, Ozark, and was additionally nominated this year in the limited series category for Inventing Anna, although she didn't win that one. During her acceptance speech, Garner thanked the Ozark writers for crafting her character. The actor said, "Has changed my life." She is great in that show. Brett Goldstein, who was also great in his show and is also a repeat winner, scored his second award in a row for Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy for his role in Apple TV Plus's fantastic sports sitcom, Ted Lasso. Thanking his Jewish family back home in Britain, the famously foul-mouthed Goldstein promised not to swear before doing so on live television. And WNBA basketball star Sue Bird retired last week at age 41. The Jewish point guard is in the conversation as the best women's basketball player of all time. She's a two-time NCAA champion, a four-time WNBA champion, a five-time Olympic gold medalist, and a four-time world champion. She's also the all-time WNBA leader in assists, games played, minutes played, all-star appearances, and seasons played. Sue Bird won the Nancy Lieberman Award twice in college, an award named after the Jewish basketball superstar and given to the top point guard in the nation. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews around the world.
Our brothers, the sons of Israel.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Martha Ann Toll has written reviews, essays, and fiction in NPR Books, The Washington Post, Millions, many other publications. She is the founding executive director of the Butler Family Fund that works for racial and social justice as a climate activist. But for our purposes, most fascinatingly this morning, she has a great new novel called Three Muses, a beautifully written book. I have to ask you, you know a lot about ballet, and it clearly comes out here. Did you dance?
My answer to that is I did, but I was a tiny little girl. My mother took me to my first dance lesson when I was four, and she was a not unusual Jewish mother and trying to get the best for her kids, and she enrolled me in a professional ballet school, and they were absolutely clear by age 11 or 12 that I had no future, which I kind of knew, but it sure made such a deep imprint on me. I fell in love with it, and the most important part of my ballet school education was that I got to watch professional dancers rehearsing, and that just was magical for me.
The ballet comes, I mean, look, I've been to many dance performances. My daughter danced, my sisters danced, my mom danced. I'm just not a dance person. I can sing and I have two left feet. but you made the ballet kind of come alive, and you made the experience of being this prima ballerina so realistic. Did you base it on anybody in particular?
No, I really appreciate your saying that. No, I feel like even though I was such a young child, I definitely sort of imbibed the idea of this kind of full body experience. I think dance, ballet, you know, warm-ups are as complete as any athlete could experience. I've definitely heard of football players being asked to take ballet so that they could tone their muscles. It's an incredible experience, the physicality of it, and that never left me. I do go to a lot of ballet. I watch a lot. I read some, but I particularly appreciate your comment because getting such an ephemeral art form on the page is a challenge.
You know, there's a lot of ephemera in a way that you bring to life. I want to talk, you spoke about memory earlier, because memory, there's a haunting quality of the memory. It has to do with John, one of the protagonists, and his experience in the war. He was forced to sing. We think of memory as something that we just kind of pull out of a drawer, but recent research on memory has shown that we actually recreate the memories every time we remember them, just organically. When you were writing about memory, how did you kind of achieve that sense of the reality of it? Or is it from talking to Holocaust survivors? Was it all invented? Tell us a little bit about that process.
Thank you. Well, from the writer's perspective, you always want to make a character as specific as possible, especially when you're writing about something like the Holocaust, which sometimes, you know, we hear 6 million, we hear these horror stories, but I think to really bring it alive, it helps us to know one person. So I did know a number of Holocaust survivors. I also do a lot of reading and have read pretty amazing fictional accounts. But I wanted to invent something very special in the sense that it's particular to John. So it's something of a composite, but it's more my own imagination.
What was the most difficult thing for you in creating Three Muses?
Everything. it took me, there were a lot of difficult things. I don't really know how to answer that. But I had, it took me several years to figure out the life trajectory of both characters, both of the main characters, Katya the ballerina and John. That was one thing that took a lot of turns around the block. And then I would say I wrestled a lot with how much backstory to put in. There was definitely too much backstory at one point, and then there was too little. And then it had a very difficult path to publication, which is true for many first novels, and mine was no exception.
You know, it takes years often to get a book published. By the time it's published, do you still feel close to it the way you did as you were writing it?
Thank you. Well, I do feel close to it. I really cared about getting this published. So, and it is my first novel, so I'm completely thrilled. But what I am slightly aware of is that as we get closer to publication, which is September 20th, I feel like I'm living with it in a different way. And I'm saying many things multiple times, but I like that because I'm being educated about my own book. It's rather surreal and extraordinary. I mean, you're a wonderful interviewer, and each person who interviews me brings out something that I didn't realize I thought. So I kind of love it.
I was thinking, you know, it kind of brings it back to life. You know, you wrote some of these words long ago, some of them not quite so long ago, but that it's such a interesting and strange process writing. What is it? Is it Hemingway that said, it's not Hemingway, maybe Grantland Rice, that said, it's not very difficult to write. You just sit down in front of a keyboard until blood comes out of your forehead.
Yes, I think that's a pickup from H.L. Mencken. I think he said, it's not so difficult, I just don't sit down and open a vein.
Yeah, also, same idea, exactly.
Exactly.
This is, in many ways, a very Jewish book, although I wouldn't say that it's necessarily Judaism that you're focused on. Can you explain kind of that subtext?
Yes. Well, it may reflect my own experience. I grew up in a very secular family, and in some ways, the Holocaust was my introduction to Judaism. But possibly more of an introduction was both my parents were Jewish, but my father's extended family to me exemplifies what we think of as the best of Jewish families. They're incredibly warm, loving, embracing, amazing, amazing people, family oriented, and fiercely curious and intellectual. So I had the tremendous, tremendous privilege of growing up in that family. But it doesn't surprise me that the book feels more Jewish than religious. It's not a religious book. Some of that is because so many Holocaust survivors couldn't make peace with the religion that would have put them in this situation, this murderous situation. Part of it is my own experience. But I think the Jewish aspect, which I really care about, again, I spoke about collective memory and also the caring Tikkun Olam part of Judaism.
Can you talk a little more about your involvement in social justice work?
Thank you. Yeah, I was very lucky as a relatively young person, I went to law school. I practiced law in various settings, and I didn't love it because I felt that law was not a good way to solve problems. I was given the opportunity to run a family foundation as the staff person with somebody else's family, who had a commitment to social justice. So they hired me, and we worked on issues of homelessness and criminal justice, which are intimately related. Our criminal justice makes homeless people. And it doesn't take you more than about 30 seconds to get into racial justice if you're doing that. So I spent a long career helping to shape the direction of the foundation and getting us on the map because we were new, and working with what I call the big boys, you know, the Ford Foundations, the Gates Foundations of the world, and trying to collaborate and do what we could to lead on these issues.
I want to come back to the book for a moment. There's a funeral scene in the book in which you use a passage written by a couple of colleagues of mine and that I know or knew, Jack Reamer and Harold Kushner, rabbis, you know, in the rising of the sun and it's going down. We remember them, that passage. The only thing I would say is you have it chanted. I don't think I've ever heard it chanted, but it's a very beautiful passage. And I really like the way you interweave that. How'd you decide to do that?
This is going to now show the level of my very deficient Jewish education. We keep a little pamphlet around for saying Kaddish for our relatives that I'm sure my husband picked up at a funeral home.
I'm sure.
And it's in there and it's just so incredibly beautiful, such a beautiful prayer. And I felt like it actually exemplified John's experience in some ways more than the Kaddish, which, I mean, you're the rabbi here, but the Kaddish is so mysterious to me. It's such a difficult, it's so difficult for me to understand the meaning of the Kaddish. It's so complex and esoteric.
I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with death, the Kaddish. It's just a doxology of praise of God. So the idea is even it. If anybody finds comfort in the Kaddish, it's not because of the words. It's because of the sound and the shared experience of memory and remembering other people who have died. But I agree with you. If you actually think about the words, it's passages like the one, you know, that the rising of the sun and so forth, that passage about memory, that's going to be more comforting.
I also...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Just the rhythm of it, the English... I don't speak Hebrew, but the English translation is such an extraordinary
No, it was written in English, that's why.
It was written in English,
Yeah. You know, those guys are both stylists with language and underrated, Jack Reamer, I think, in particular, and they did a beautiful job on that. And you're bringing out some of your character, John Curtin's pain in that process. Different question. I know of musicians in the Holocaust who had to play like string quartets as people were arriving. That's the most famous one. Do you know of people that were compelled to sing, or did you invent that character?
I invented that. I think it actually may have happened, but I did invent that.
It may have it. Who knows? There's so many things that did occur.
I mean, there were certainly orchestra. You know this better than I do, but there were certainly orchestras at concentration camps.
The character of the demanding, brutal ballet, I don't know, impresario, director, I'm not sure the right term even.
Choreographer,
He's a choreographer, but he's really the dictator, right? Is that based on anybody?
No, I mean, I think readers have asked me where George Balanchine fits into this, and I channeled my inner Balanchine, but it just so happens that I'm reviewing a major, major new biography of Balanchine, which isn't even out yet. I think my character is his own person. And as I've read this new biography of Balanchine, I realized that more and more. I did not want to do research for that character. I did want to bring out sort of Me Too 1950s style, the brutality that comes with an abusive relationship, and also the fact that it's not always completely one-sided, and it can be a lot more complicated, even as we deplore the abusiveness.
So last question, what are you going to write next?
Well, I am trying to finish a surreal novel about a girl stuck in a painting. That's my shortest answer.
I love the artistic flair you bring to your work. The book is called Three Muses. Martha, where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about the book?
Thank you so much. Well, the first place is my website, which is spelled like my name, Martha Ann, A-N-N-E, Toll. And everything is there, all of my events, which I'm super excited. I hope I'm coming to your city or that you can connect with me virtually. You can sign up for my newsletter there. And I'm also active on social media.
Martha, thank you so much for a great visit here on Too Jewish.
Rabbi, I can't thank you enough. It's been a pleasure.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Judy Mandel, author of the powerful and painful memoir, White Flag, about dealing with addiction in her own family. Don't forget, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person this Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat, all starting at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush. Torah study is on Zoom. But everything's live in person and available on our Facebook page as well. The Jewish High Holy Days are coming up just a week from tonight. Join us in person or online. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org for information on how to come to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and celebrate the new year with me at Congregation Beit Simcha. Our playout this morning comes from the liturgy of the morning of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. On Rosh Hashanah, it is written. On Yom Kippur, it is sealed. Who shall live? Who shall die? And, well, much more. This is a musical setting by an old friend, Cantor Meir Finkelstein, for the coming High Holy Days. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good final week of 5782, a healthy week, we pray, and a week, we pray profoundly, of peace.
Berosh HaShanah Yikatevun Uvyom Tzom Kippur Yechatemun. Berosh HaShanah Yikatevun Uvyom Tzom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.